This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Sloppy Joe's, pizza, ice cream, tater tots. These are all the makings of the school cafeteria lunch. But one man is on a crusade to change the choices in the school food line. Tony Geraci is known as the cafeteria man. His work focuses on many healthy changes and making those healthy changes in cafeterias in Baltimore and Memphis school systems. And he recently visited North Carolina to talk about changing the menu in Chatham County's public school system. Tony, welcome. Good to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Frank.
So tell us about how did school lunches get to be what they are? I mean, they look pretty good, you know, but yeah, they're not.
I think that you know, I was a child of the 50s and the 60s, and there was still some cooking still going on in the schools. And I actually was born and raised, grew up in New Orleans in a city that names its highways after chefs. So, you know, food has always been a part of my life. The dramatic shift in what food is today and what food used to be was the notion of convenience, right? That the school nutrition staff didn't have the skills to cook anymore. So it was easier to open up a box, shake it onto a tray, pop it into a warming oven, and voila, that's lunch. The reality is, through that convenience, we've been systematically pumping our kids full of kind of crap, you know? So we've successfully raised an entire generation of children that think, you know, fruit is a flavor. It's not real. Yeah. It's not an orange. It's not an apple. It's a fruity flavor. And we have this really great opportunity right now in our lifetime to change that.
What's the difference? What's in those frozen packages that we reheat that we're losing, or what's not in them that we would get from bringing in whole fresh foods?
Well, I think depending on what it is, I mean, there's a lot of filler. There's a lot of like soy isolates. There's a lot of wheat and corn and, you know, all the GMO things that, you know, all of these big GMO companies are promoting and growing. I mean, it's self-serving as opposed to whole food, real food, you know, food that has one or two ingredients. And I think what is happening is kids have become desensitized to flavor, to real food. Mm. So I'm a chef. So that's what I live for, is giving a kid something that they've never tried before and looking at the expression on their face when they start ingesting it. It's powerful stuff.
All right. So you get this great feedback. You give it to the kids. They love it. Now you go to the cafeteria staff or the school system, and their expression probably not the same.
Not the same. So what you have to do is you have to – this is an education process for everyone, not just kids, but parents and teachers and systems. And the idea is child nutrition programs, by and large across the country, are viewed as this necessary evil that we need to feed our kids, right? You're the hired help and your job is to give them a meal, all right? My spin on it is child nutrition is one of the cornerstones of education that a hungry kid or a kid jacked up on sugar doesn't learn. So it's unrealistic to have this expectation that educators are going to deliver a lesson plan to a kid that's not ready to learn. So I look at nutrition as readiness, right? We serve education a tray at a time every single day. And my vision and my goal is and my mission is to put healthy kids in front of educators that are ready to learn. So this is about readiness for me.
What are the difference in costs in preparing whole and natural foods, more healthy foods, in terms of time and money if we were to make that shift?
So that's a good question. And depending on what the resources are of that community, you can kind of give a detailed answer. Look, often a lot of the school systems that exist today, and especially new construction, they didn't bother to build kitchens, you know, along the way. They built sort of warming stations. Yeah. So we operate under a central kitchen concept, right? Kind of a hub and spoke thing, where we prepare the core ingredients at the central kitchen and we send cafeteria ready products to the school. So they're all from scratch. They're all, you know, whole ingredients. And, you know, it's much like going to the Olive Garden where you think there's a bunch of chefs in the bag, but they're opening up, you know, bags of marinara sauce and cooking pasta and combining the two.
That's actually what I thought was going on, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no. So that's.
Forgive me.
Yeah. No. So that's one method of doing it. We're really fortunate in Memphis that, you know, it's deep south and cooking traditions are very strong. So all of our schools have equipped kitchens. But rather than serving chicken nuggets, I serve chicken, you know. You can buy chicken for 49 cents a pound, or you can buy chicken nuggets for $5 a pound.
So that actually could be cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, anytime you have processed food, the process that is in the food is in the industry is known as value adding, right? So somebody has to pay for that value they've added.
Because that's price adding too.
Yeah.
Federal government reimburses the cost of lunches, rates at about $2.90, right, for those receiving free lunches and maybe a quarter for those paying for meals. Is it possible to develop programs with proper nutrition on that kind of a limited budget?
Absolutely. And in fact, Memphis, Shelby County, the new Shelby County School District that I'm working with right now will be offering the very first universal free child nutrition program for every kid, every school, every day next year for over 110,000 kids. Wow. These are meals cooked from scratch, locally sourced in a lot of our cases. But more importantly, the menu development was developed with kids. So, yes, you can leverage that money. And to kind of put it into a business perspective, like I run $100 million a year food business and I don't receive a penny from the school system. All of that money is all generated through reimbursement of meals served. And in the industry, it's called ADP, Average Daily Participation. So that's the secret. You just have to get the kids eating more of the meals. We do breakfast in the classroom. We have grab-and-go meals. I do whatever it takes to make sure that our kids have access to this great food.
Now, I want to come back to something you said before because this is interesting and would seem like an obstacle to many that kids won't like it, that they've already, you know, sort of acculturated themselves to this other food. But they do. That's what you're saying.
They do. And the most important thing is, look, so I have a real strong business background and, you know, in the food industry. I recognize that these 110,000 kids that I serve, they're my clients. So I need to have some input from my clients. So we do like an annual food show where, you know, vendors come in to show their stuff. If the kids like it, then, you know, and if it fits our criteria, we buy it. If they don't like it, thumbs down, we're done with it, right? This is the second year in a row that we're sending our culinary teams to compete at the White House in the Cooking Up Change competition. And that's about using the school pantry, the school's budget, and the federal criteria to develop a school meal, but kids do it from start to finish. And what we've started doing is incorporating those recipes into our regular lunch cycle. So those barbecue tacos with jalapeno slaw developed by kids. And they know that.
That sounds pretty good.
And they know that. No, and it's awesome.
It does. Well, so, and then that sounds like there's a great opportunity then to integrate this into the curriculum as well. A business plan, kids learning how to do food, how to make it, how to prepare it, how to ship it, and how to make money producing it.
We grow a great deal of our own food. We have, you know, hoop houses and stuff. I invested about $250,000 last year to develop a vertically integrated food system, right? At the end of the year, you know, according to the Department of Agriculture, we netted about $1.3 million of wholesale value produce. So that $250,000, the ROI, the return on the investment, was $1.1 million. So that was a $1.1 million savings to my community. To your point, gave my kids some amazing learning opportunities, some job skills. You know, this industry is not just about cooking, right? There's logistics, there's science, there's, you know, a lot of things to run a $100 million a year business. And I want my kids to get turned on by that.
It seems to me, how much resistance do you get from the food industry itself? You talked about the self-serving nature of our current system. That suggests there might be resistance to change.
There has been some, but on the flip side of that, because I've been in this industry for many decades, I've been able to go to those manufacturer partners and say, look, you know, I want you to make a lasagna, but this is how I want you to make it. And then we'll sit down and collaboratively develop the product together. They know that if they, you know, sell it to me for one serving, that's like 110,000 portions. You know, that makes sense. Oh, yeah, I'll make that for you. And we can agree upon price points and content, and everybody wins. And I think that people think that, you know, the food industry is like opposed to all these changes. They're opposed to the change if they're not part of the process. Mm. Everybody has to be part of the conversation.
That includes farmers, too, and I would think processors. So talk about the impact on local economies of bringing farmers into this, processors, canners, all the people who could then, at the local level, be making money and producing healthy food.
Sure. So in Shelby County, where I'm currently working, we're in Memphis. So we're really blessed to be living in probably the most fertile Delta country on the planet. All right. So we can grow food year round there. And we grow a lot of GMO soy and cotton there to support that industry. When you're growing fruits and vegetables, like your yield per acre goes from like $500 or $600 to, you know, $10,000 an acre. So there's, you know, there's some labor that is associated with it. But if you can purchase that local produce, that money stays in your economy. So for every dollar that you spend locally, the formula is that it'll flip five times before it leaves town. So next year, I'll spend $40 million buying food. If I can even get 10 million of those 40 million into the local economy, that translates to a $50 million economic impact that creates jobs, creates opportunities, supports the economy, but more importantly, supports the community that supports me. Makes sense.
It certainly does. Is there resistance? How easy is it to get these ideas to take hold as you go around the country trying to promote these ideas?
Well, it's about education. And I think that part of it is understanding what the needs are, right? So look, I don't need glossy number one farmer's market beautiful fruit, right? Because I'm going to chop it up and turn it into something, right? So save that and get the highest retail dollar that you can get for it at the farmer's market or your retailer or whatever. But the other stuff, like, I want to buy that because I'll use that. Now that value that you've sort of assigned to that will go to pay other bills, right? And I think that as communities take hold of this concept, I think that it behooves communities to have a really serious conversation about, well, look, if you're willing to grow a certain amount of food to support our public system, maybe we should give you some tax abatements to do that. I mean, for God's sakes, we pay farmers not to grow tobacco, right? So why wouldn't we pay why wouldn't we pay farmers to grow food to support our kids, to support our community, to build our future?
It seems like in a place like this, this is certainly fertile ground in the Piedmont, North Carolina, where there's already a large consciousness about food shed and what it can do for you. Do you go places where this is not integrated at all? The idea of locally produced food is just totally foreign to people, and they can't even get it in their heads that tater tots is not the answer.
Yeah, right. No. You're absolutely right. I see that a lot. I mean, fortunately, there are groups like, you know, the Abundance Foundation that asked me to come here and work with the local system, that not only do they get it, but they're a group that are saying, how can we help, right? You know, we're not the enemy. You know, what we want to do is like leverage whatever resources that we can pull together to make it better for all of us. So how can we help? And that's what's happening around the country. It's generally outside influences that are talking about this. The weird thing about public school systems, and I've been working with these things for the last couple of decades, there's a culture that is very sort of closed, if you will. And often people think, well, you just don't understand my business. You just don't understand what I do. And they're right to a certain extent. But there are some fundamental things that we do understand. We understand that hungry kids don't learn. Unhealthy kids cost the community a lot of money. All right. So this is a real preventative thing. Like I grew up in a generation where polio just about decimated the planet. Right. But we as a planet decided that this is nonsense. We are going to pool all of our resources together and we're going to eradicate this thing to the best of our ability. And we have. Type 2 diabetes is a pandemic. Not just in America, but around the world now. And we know what the causes are. The causes are food. We know what the cure is. The cure is food, right? So why aren't we as resolute about eradicating that as we have been with other things? And the short answer is because there is money in this industry.
But there's money to be made by everybody, and the conversion makes us even more money, which is your point earlier on.
Absolutely.
Tony, what a great pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Tony Geraci is the cafeteria man. He was recently in our area spreading the gospel of whole natural foods in our schools. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening to The State of Things. If you want to hear more and see more, go to our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Nicole Campbell, Alex Granados, and Laura Lee, as well as Sean Wen. Robin Copley is the technical director, Brent Wolf, the news director, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.